His attributes can be comprehended to some extent by a human being. The reason is that man himself finds some of these attributes within him, though at a very small scale. God has granted man some portion of his knowledge, power, providence, wisdom, and mercy. Man can thus analogously have some idea of the attributes of God. This aspect can also be understood by saying that man's being is passive in nature. The Quran has used various words for the action which emanates from God to create man's being. These words are irada, or intention, qaul, or utterance, mashia, or will, kalima, or word, and amr, state of affairs. The reality of a shay, or thing, is the mashia, or intention. A shay is called a shay because of it. The attributes which manifest in a thing are in reality the attributes of this word. The reality of man's being is also the same. Furthermore, he possesses an awareness of his being and thus is able to comprehend to some extent the attributes of the Maker. However, it is essential for this that a person keep his intellect alive and that he, under the guidance of divine revelation, keep reflecting on the signs of God within him and in the world around him. For this very reason, the Quran has repeatedly called upon its addressees to exercise ta'aqul, tafakkur, and tadhakkur. Imam Amin Ehsan Islahi writes, "The objective of ta'aqul is that a person should neither be guided merely by his desires, impulses, and emotions, nor should he give himself up to superstitions and myths. On the other hand, he should be guided by the intellect God has bestowed on him and must trust the guidance it provides." Tafakkur means that one should prudently deliberate on the decrees and laws of the universe and on the requisites and requirements of human nature and acknowledge with full sincerity the principles which govern one's life which are derived from these decrees and laws. Tadhakkur means that the self-evident truths in which a person believes should be remembered by him even during the upheaval in his emotions and desires, and then without any hesitation accept the obvious consequences. Reference Amin Ehsan Islahi, Tazkiyah-e-Nafs, 92. If one deliberates on one's surroundings and on the world within him, everything bears testimony that God is not merely the first cause and an eternal entity. He is in fact a being who has intention and knowledge and has all noble attributes. An explanation of this follows. Matter does not have the faculty of intention. It also does not possess any knowledge and intellect. Similarly, the intention and intellect and other potentials of the soul cannot be its own because it is plagued with weakness, short memory, and weak will and determination. However, since from both matter and soul, great benefits and remarkable phenomena are produced, which cannot result from a power which is blind and deaf. Both are creations and every creation requires a creator. Were they created without a creator, or were they their own creators? Have they created the heavens and the earth? No. In fact, they in reality have no faith. Surah 52, verse 35-36. Such is God your Lord, the creator of everything. There is no God but Him. Where then can you turn away from Him? Surah 40, verse 62. This creator of the heavens and the earth is self-sufficient and does not need anyone. Thus there is only one cause of creation, and that is His intention of mercy. When He desired to bestow His favor, He created this world and blessed His creation with innumerable favors that cannot be counted. Thus, just as His name is Allah, it is also Rahman. It is the Most Gracious who has taught the Quran because He created man and taught him articulate speech. Just look up and observe the sun and the moon and pursue their ordered course. The plants and the trees all bow down in adoration. And He has raised high the sky and set up a balance in it that you also do not exceed the balance, and weigh properly with fairness and do not fall short in the balance, and He has laid the earth for His creation. Therein are fruits and sheathed palm trees, and husked grains of various sort and scented flowers. So which of the majesties of your Lord will ye, O men and jinn, deny? Surah 55, verses 1-13. Knowledge is nothing but the knowledge of hidden potentials. Thus every knowledge bears witness to these potentials. If these potentials are not from a being who can perceive and exercise his will, then they should be mere coercion. However, the organization found in this world and its deep meaningfulness refute this. None of these can be without exercising knowledge and intellect. Thus, the Creator is not merely powerful, He is knowledgeable and wise too. Ask them, do you disbelieve in Him and associate partners with Him who created the earth in 2 days? The Lord of the universe is He, and after creating the earth, He set up on it mountains towering high above it, and placed His blessings upon it, and for all the needy according to their needs, provided it with sustenance with correct measure. All this in 4 days. Then He turned towards the sky, which was in the form of smoke, and He said to it, and to the earth, obey the directive willingly or unwillingly. Both said, we come forth willingly. Then He made 7 heavens in 2 days, and to each heaven He assigned its task. And we decked the lowest heaven with brilliant stars and made it fully secure. All this is the design of the Mighty One, the All-Knowing. Surah 41, verses 9 to 12. The organization and management of the world within us and the one outside is a reality. It cannot be imagined without a being who is living and who can exist for himself, needing no one for his existence, and is also instrumental in bringing others into existence. God, there is no God but He, the living, the sustainer. Neither slumber nor sleep overtakes Him. All that is in the heavens and the earth belongs to Him. Who can intercede with Him for someone except by His permission? He knows what lies before them and what is after them, and without His will, they cannot grasp any part of His knowledge. His dominion prevails in the heavens and the earth, and their protection does not weary Him in the slightest way, and He is the exalted and the glorious one. Surah 2, verse 255. What is time? It is a concept which emanates from the fact that the Creator, who is living and is self-sustaining, is eternal. Thus, He is the foremost and nothing is before Him. He is the last and there is nothing after Him. He is the apparent and nothing is above Him. He is the hidden and nothing is below Him. He cannot be curtailed in time and space. However, His knowledge encompasses whatever is found in time and space. He is the first and the last, the apparent and the hidden, and He has knowledge of all things. Surah 57, verse 3. Any conception of a being without attributes is mere supposition. Differences in opinion in this regard are nothing in reality, and the essence of each opinion is the same. Thus all worthy attributes like creativity, justice, mercy, compassion, knowledge, and wisdom are validated as the personal attributes of God and precede their effect because the cause of everything precedes its effect. Consequently, it is said that even after destruction of this world, the grandeur and majesty of God shall continue to exist with full grace. All that lives on earth is mortal and only the person of your majestic and glorious God will abide forever. Surah 55, verses 26 to 27. In understanding the attributes of God, the aspect of finesse in them, however, should always remain in consideration because power is praiseworthy only when it is complemented by mercy, affection, and justice. If anger, revenge, rage, and fury manifest against oppression and injustice, then it is commendable too. Mercy, forgiveness, and generosity are laudable in their right context. The mention of the attribute of Hamid, or praiseworthy, with Ghani, or self-sufficient, Hakim, or wise, with Alim, or knowledgeable, and Ghafur, or merciful, with Aziz, or powerful, in the Quran guides us to this very aspect of finesse and poise. And for God are only good names. Call on Him by these names, and keep away from those who distort them. And whatever they are doing, they shall soon receive its reward. Surah 7, verse 180. Whatever conception of God one perceives, it cannot be devoid of majesty, splendor, and perfection. Consequently, for example, attributes such as Al-Wahid, the only one, Al-Ahad, the unique, and Al-Samad, the rock, depict perfection. The attributes of Al-Quddus, or the holy, Al-Salam, the one who is peace in entirety, and Al-Mu'min, the peacegiver, are attributes of splendor and Al-Malik, the king. Al-Aziz, the powerful, and Al-Jabbar, the dominant, are attributes of majesty. The attributes of majesty produce fear, respect, and praise in a person. The attributes of splendor produce gratitude and love for him and instill hope in a person. The attributes of majesty are more apparent to his senses, and the attributes of splendor are more apparent to his intellect and heart. If God is kept in consideration, the attributes of splendor appear more dominant, and if a human soul is kept in consideration, the attributes of majesty appear dominant. Man, while fearing God, leaps towards him for this very reason and tries to seek refuge in his attributes of splendor. In the supplications of the Prophet sallallahu alaihi wasallam, the words, "God, I seek refuge with you from you," refers to this very reality. Reference Muslim Al-Jami Al-Sahih 201-202, number 1090. This is the prayer of the person who is overwhelmed with the love of his Lord, is apprehensive of his self-sufficiency and magnificence, is anxious of meeting him, and submits to all his decisions with full regard. When the Quran says that all gracious names are his, it means that every name which depicts his majesty, splendor, and perfection is gracious and can be given to him. Tell them, you may call him as Allah or Rahman. By whatever name you call him, his are the most gracious names. Surah 17, verse 110. Imam Hamid al-Din al-Farahi, after explaining these aspects in his Al-Qaid illa Uyun al-Qaid, writes, "The conception of God in one's heart should be someone who is kind, merciful, forgiving, and compassionate. He smiles and laughs with full sympathy and is gentle. He is the kindest of the kind and the most merciful. He is a person's support and avenges from his enemies on his behalf. This is because one can attain tranquility through him, seek his nearness, and is anxious of meeting him. Then hallowed is he as well, and is also an embodiment of the truth. Thus it is logically impossible that he not differentiate between good and evil, and that someone who is bad, filthy, unjust, antagonistic, one who forbids good, exceeds limits, is skeptical of the truth, and is adamant in opposing the truth attain his nearness. Indeed, he is forgiving and merciful to those who turn to him and adopt what is good and forsake what is evil, who remember his greatness and majesty so that he can give him due regard, who keep humbling themselves before him, keeping in mind that he is self-sufficient and does not need any of his creations, and is grand in his planning and management. Then in spite of the fact that all his decisions are the very truth and are decked with his relentless mercy, his creations have knowledge of these decisions to a limited extent, which is appropriate for them. Thus it is essential that all his decisions be accepted and his servants should be happy and content with all his commands and directives." Reference Hamid al-Din al-Farahi, Al-Qaid illa Uyun, Al-Qaid, 1st edition, 43. The greatness of the Almighty becomes evident from his attributes of perfection. When a person acquires the correct understanding of these attributes, he professes faith in a God who is unique, peerless, and only one of a kind. He is the rock of shelter for all. To him solely belong the heavens and the earth, and whatever is between them. No one shares his sovereignty, and no one is his partner in running the affairs of this universe. There is nothing in this world which is hidden from him. No affair of this world is beyond his jurisdiction and control. Everything needs him, but he needs no one. Matter, plants, and animals all prostrate before him, and are busy in celebrating his praises and glorifying him. His power is immense, and he is all-embracing, and every particle of this universe is subservient to his will. Whenever he wants, he can destroy anything at any time, and whenever he wants, he can recreate it. It is he who bestows honor or humiliation. Everything is mortal, and he is the only immortal. He is beyond what is beyond, yet he is closer to man than his life vain. His knowledge and wisdom encompass everything. He even knows what is concealed in the hearts. His intention supersedes all intentions, and his command supersedes all commands. He is free of all faults and is without any blemish and beyond any allegation. All that is in the heavens and the earth gives glory to God. He is the mighty and wise. To him belongs the dominion of the heavens and the earth. He only gives life and he only gives death, and he has power over all things. He is the first and the last, the apparent and the hidden, and has knowledge of all things. It is he who created the heavens and the earth in 6 days, and then sat on the throne. He knows all that goes into the earth, and all that emerges from it, and all that comes down from heavens, and all that ascends to it. He is with you wherever you are and is aware of whatever you do. He has sovereignty over the heavens and the earth, and to him turn all affairs. He makes the night pass into the day pass into the night, and he has knowledge of what is concealed in the hearts. Surah 57, verses 1-6. Among the attributes of perfection, the attribute of Tawheed occupies the most importance. It is this attribute of Tawheed which is the most explained and emphasized upon by the Quran. So much so, the surah on which the last group of the Quran effectively ends directs the Prophet ﷺ to declare the concept of Tawheed openly before the people. Proclaim, O Prophet, that God is alone. He is with everyone. He is neither anyone's father nor anyone's son, and there is none like him. Surah 112, verses 1-4. All the efforts of the prophets of God revolve around establishing Tawheed in the society. Every single word of its history, narrated by the Almighty in the Quran, testifies to this reality. Imam Amin Ehsan Islahi writes, "They are sent in this world so that they can take people out of the servitude of others and make them the servants of God purely. They should consider him to be their creator and their king, and only serve him and show their obedience to him alone and only trust him. They should seek help solely from him. They should thank him only when they are blessed with favors and seek his help only when in distress. Both in fear and in hope, they should always look up to him, and they should consign themselves to him. Their love should be subservient to his love, and their liking should be subservient to his liking. They should consider him to be sole and singular as regards his being, his attributes and his rights, and in no way should associate anyone with him in these matters, whether this associate be an angel, a jinn, a prophet, a saint, any other person or their own selves." Reference Amin Ehsan Islahi, Haqiqat-i-Shirk-o-Tawheed, 1st edition, 310. It is this importance of Tawheed on account of which the Quran has explicitly stated that without adhering to it, no deed of a person is acceptable, and if a person adheres to it, then there is hope that every sin may be forgiven. The Quran says, "God will not forgive those who deliberately set up partners with him. Lesser than this sin, however, he will forgive any sin for anyone he, according to his law, wants to." And in reality, he who associates partners with him is guilty of a heinous sin. Surah 4, verse 48. The reason for this is that a person cannot remain persistent on his sin if he professes faith in Tawheed. And if he happens to sin, he will find that the grace and blessing of God will induce him to repent and to seek God's forgiveness. Such a person will surely turn to God and as such become entitled to be forgiven before the Day of Judgment. For this very reason, the Prophet ﷺ is reported to have said that a person shall surely be granted paradise if he adheres to Tawheed. The Almighty will not cast such a person in the fire of hell. Reference Al-Bukhari Al-Jami Al-Sahi, 1044-1045, number 5967. Reference Muslim Al-Jami Al-Sahi, 34-35, numbers 136, 138, and 139. The argument which nullifies polytheism is that no one has any basis of associating partners with God. At more than one place, the Quran has demanded from its addressees to present, if they can, any grounds for polytheism, whether based on intellect or on divine sources. Only God himself could have informed us if he had any associates or not, and the only way to have knowledge of God's will in this regard were the divine books he revealed or the traditions and narratives which have been transferred generation after generation from his prophets and messengers. None of these contain anything which substantiates polytheism in any way. Ask them, "Have you reflected on those whom you worship besides God? Show me what have they created on this earth, or do they have a share in the heavens? Bring me a scripture revealed before this, or some other vestige of divine knowledge if what you say is true." Surah 46, verse 4. Other arguments of Tawheed which are cited by the Quran are also very sound and based on established facts derived from knowledge and reason. As examples, we shall present some verses here. "Your God is one God. There is no God but Him. He is the compassionate, the ever merciful. There is no doubt that in the creation of the heavens and the earth, and in the alternation of night and day, and in the ships that sail in the ocean with cargoes beneficial to man, and in the water which God sends down from the sky, with which he enlivens the earth after its death, dispersing over it all kinds of living beings, and in the manifestations caused by the winds, and in the obedient clouds that are between the sky and earth, surely in these there are signs for men of intellect to understand this reality. Surah 2, verses 163-164. Amin Ehsan Islahi writes, "If one reflects on this verse, it becomes evident that it cites parallel, in fact opposing, elements of nature which at the same time display amazing harmony and unity in the overall service which they do for this universe. A perfunctory look at each member of the pairs the verse refers to shows that they are opposite to one another, the heavens and the earth, the night and the day, the ships and the sea. However, a deeper look shows that if from one aspect they seem opposite to one another, then from another they seem to complement one another for the overall benefit and well-being of this universe. Without the sky and its glowing suns and glittering stars, the earth would lose its liveliness and prosperity, and in fact would cease to exist. Similarly, without this earth, who can tell, many stars and heavenly bodies would be gravely affected. Similarly, just as our life and that of other living things of this earth is dependent on the light, heat, and freshness provided by the day, it is also dependent on the calm, peace, and cool of the night. It is both night and day in unison which guarantee life on this earth. Look at the astounding expanse of seas and oceans around us, and the mountainous waves which build up in them and produce awe and dread. However, in spite of such dreadfulness and fright they may cause, how smoothly and slickly do ships and boats glide across them and link the trade, economy, culture, knowledge, and technology, in fact every sphere, of various parts of our world." The next part of the verse mentions rain from the heavens, which once again sustains life and vivacity and once again embellishes the surface of the earth with greenery and vegetation. The heavens, one can clearly see, are millions of miles away from the earth. Yet the two are harmonious with one another and come together to produce all this. Hidden in the earth are treasures of flora and foliage, but it is only after the heavens send down rain that this concealed treasure is revealed. Similar is the relationship between clouds and winds. Heaps and mounds of moisture-laden clouds stand their ground unless strong winds push them and propel them to various parts which have been fixed for them. It is these winds which thrust them towards north and south and east and west. It is they who make them vanish from the heavens and then make them reappear on the horizon when they want to. What then does a deep reflection on all these phenomena lead to? Is this world the battlefield of opposing and conflicting elements, in which contrasting and divergent forces always seem to be at loggerheads with one another? Or does there exist an immensely wise and prudent force which reigns supreme over all these opposing elements and sagaciously uses them to create a systematic order and an overall purpose? Obviously, it is this second conclusion which one reaches after deeply observing this world. On further deliberation, one comes to the conclusion that this world has not come into existence of its own accord, and nor the development it has undergone be regarded as automatic. If such was the case, how could its conflicting elements have worked in harmony with one another to achieve a higher goal, the harmony and concord which is so evident in every part of this universe? Reference Amin Ehsan Islahi, Tadabburi Quran, Volume 1, 401. The Quran says, "Tell them, if as they claim, there were other gods beside God, they would surely seek to dethrone him." Surah 17, verse 42. Imam Amin Ehsan Islahi writes, "The idolaters of Arabia considered God to be the sovereign deity analogously on the basis of kings and rulers of this world. They also professed faith in a lot of other deities about whom they thought that they had a share in this rule and would be able to procure the nearness of God for those who worship them and would also be able to have the desires and wishes of these worshippers fulfilled." This verse is a refutation of this baseless claim. They are told that if God had partners and associates as they think, then they, at some time or another, would have tried to rebel against him and overthrow him, and the whole system of this world would have been disrupted. The implication is that the worldly kingdoms and kings, on the basis of which they have analogously set up partners of God, every now and then would get disrupted and geographically altered because of the rebellions and disputes from their courtiers. However, here no one can even point out a single instance in which, for example, the sun left its path or the earth its orbit. In another verse, this aspect is referred to in the following words: "Were there other gods in the sky and earth besides God, they would have become disrupted." Surah 21, verse 22. Reference Ibid, volume 4, 508. At another place, the Quran says, "Do you not see that whatever is in the heavens and the earth, the sun, the moon, the stars, the mountains, the trees, the beasts, and countless men, all prostrate before God? And there are many on whom punishment has become mandatory, and he who is humiliated by God has none to honor him, because God does what he intends according to his law." Surah 22, verse 18. Cited here is the argument in favor of Tawheed, which is testified by every object of this universe by its very existence. We have already alluded to the fact that every object of this universe in its nature has an Abrahamic temperament. The sun, the moon, the stars, the mountains, and the animals that tread the earth all follow the divine law on which they have been created. None of them deviates from this law in the slightest manner. The sun, whom some foolish people worship, bears testimony from its very existence that it stands and bows before the Almighty every day. It raises its head at the time of sunrise and then stands before the Almighty till noon. After midday, it kneels before him and at sunset prostrates before him and remains in this state all night. It is to this reality which the waxing and waning of the moon and the rising and setting of stars point. The same is true for the mountains, trees, and animals. Their shadows at all times stand, kneel, or bow down before the Almighty, and a little deliberation shows that such is the Abrahamic temperament of this shadow that it always remains opposite to the sun. If the sun is in the east, the shadow will stretch in the west and vice versa. In other words, the shadow of every object from its very existence tells us that it is not the sun, but its creator who is worthy of prostration. This argument in favor of Tawheed is more of a hint and is seldom grasped by logicians. However, for those who reflect on the universe, this hint has great value. Reference Ibid, volume 1, 279.